Hello and warm welcome to Animal Voices. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2013. My name's Alyssa. I'm joined in studio today by my co-hosts, Allison.
Hello.
And Jenny.
Heyo.
And Tim.
Hello.
We at Animal Voices believe in a world in which non-human animals are afforded mercy and compassion and granted the basic right to live free from exploitation. On today's show, we're freestyling it. Get to know your hosts a little better, and we're going to take a break from the usual dense interview format. There's so much to talk about in terms of vegan news and animal rights from week to week, and we only ever get a chance to scratch the surface because of that format. So we're really looking forward to kind of relaxing a little bit and talking about what's new in Vancouver and abroad. We're going to be talking about things like Easter, shark protection, lion meat, Vancouver food news, fairy tales, and more. And without further ado, on with the show. So first of all, I think we've all heard of the new bus ads up
at least about us in
around
Vancouver.
The city. Yeah, so in Vancouver, there's a new bus ad campaign sponsored by the Vancouver Humane Society. And there's huge ads on the back of downtown buses that are getting people to ask the question, food or friend, and why? And so they have a picture of a little a dog on one side that says friend, and on the other side is a little piglet, and it says food, and in the middle it asks you why. So yeah, it's this sort of carnis notion, I guess, like Melanie Joy talks about.
Sure.
Yeah, that kind of cognitive dissonance, like why are we eating one, and aren't they actually the same? They're both animals.
It's interesting. I've talked to a couple of convinced meat eaters about this ad, and even though the ad wouldn't like convince them to let go of their habits, I still found that it was really powerful in getting them to think about it, and so. As a discussion starter, at least, I think it's a really, really great ad.
Yeah, I think it's just really, I think its purpose should be primarily just to plant the seed and to get people to start thinking about these things, because I think just so many people just don't realize that animals are, all animals are all the same and they all deserve to live. Just having that imagery there, oh, a cute puppy, oh, a cute piglet. Oh, that's what I'm having for Easter this weekend.
Yeah, it seems so obvious and so elementary. Like, yeah, people get that we're eating animals, but we're indoctrinated at such a young age that one is food and one is friend. And I think the most common response is just the kind of immature, like, bacon. And I've seen a lot of like, oh, yeah, we should start eating dogs. That's delicious. And just this kind of like really immature sarcastic response about like how dog meat is delicious or something.
I got defriended by a longtime real friend and Facebook friend about a few weeks ago because I posted up a baking kind of joke photo that my friend and I both, who are friends with him, both laughed about because he's always posting those things, and he defriended me.
Really?
Like real life friend.
Wow. Anyway, yeah. So I hope you, if you live in Vancouver, keep your eyes open for those ads. And I really hope they get people thinking. Let's see. Over the last week, I had some delicious nibbles. I won one of the vegan prom raffle prizes.
So lucky.
Which was a big basket full of coupons and goodies. And one of them was a coupon to Fairy Cakes, the Vancouver Vegan Cupcake Shop on Fraser at about 20th, I think.
Yeah, 19th or 20th.
Yeah, and they just had their one-year anniversary party this past weekend. So I greeted her early on Saturday morning, Sarah, and she gave me a delicious sticky bun. They have marshmallow sticky buns. They're delicious. And a latte and, a bunch of other cookies and treats. Fairy Cakes is right close to my house, but I haven't really been
often.
But it's nice to know they have, like, coffee and stuff, too.
And Nice Shoes is right there, too. Yeah. That's great that that's in your neighborhood.
Yeah, totally. So that was just one thing I did over the weekend.
And I heard rumors there's a new vegan restaurant coming to Fraser as well, where the Eatery Frey used to be. They just got sold and are closed now, and there's a new one supposedly coming there. So I think Fraser Street is really becoming to be the vegan mecca in Vancouver, which is great.
Hopefully
because we live
it will
there.
Be soon. Well, I'll talk about what I did last weekend, and I think you all really missed out. Every year, in March, my friends and I go to Seattle Veg Fest. It's an annual two-day vegetarian food extravaganza where thousands of people each pay $8 to be able to sample up to 500 veggie food samples for the whole day. And I've been going every year for about the last 4 or 5 years. I'm not even sure, with a few friends and my sister, and this year it was my friend Denise and my friend Melissa. We've had them both on the show before, actually, and my sister. And yeah, I recommend it if you live in Vancouver. It's really an event not to be missed if you really like trying out a lot of free vegetarian food samples, and just to really find out too what the new products are that are local to that area, and then just more national too, and going into North America. So as people know, living here in Vancouver, Seattle, it's only about 3 hours away by car, and you know, a lot of that's actually waiting at the border. So it's such an easy trip. So I left my place at 5:45 in the morning. We arrived in the city around 9:30 a.m. and we actually decided to go out for breakfast first before hitting Veg Fest for more food. This was totally a food day trip. So we got to Veg Fest around 11 a.m. and it was already pretty packed there. It's located at the Seattle Center Exhibition Hall. It's this really huge room, and it's packed with just tables. Have any of you been before?
I have, yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. So
it's
so much fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Worth it. You pay $8 and you get a huge goodie bag that's totally worth the $8. And if you sign up for the
membership,
you get treat bag.
This event is run by the Vegetarians of Washington, a nonprofit organization, and they actually have this amazing membership deal where this year it was $22. You get this huge grocery bag full of groceries, and then you get a subscription to the Vegetarian Times magazine, plus multiple coupons to food businesses around town. So that's a good deal too. Two of my friends got that deal, and so all kinds of vegetarian food product samples that you may want to try out. Many kinds of crackers, non-dairy cheeses, there's cooked meal foods, chocolate, vegan donuts, lots of beverages, lots of faux meats, coconut ice cream, and so much more. However, it's not all vegan, I should point out. So for those who are concerned about that, like we were, you have to make sure that you actually ask the volunteers or vendors, because they don't have any signage there. But there's obviously more than enough, 500 food samples. There's more than enough to keep you full. And usually, you know, you'll go there and eat your fill for lunch and leave just being totally stuffed. They also have a really fantastic book section that I wanted to mention, which is one of the highlights of going there every year. It's run by the book publishing company. They bring a lot of their books, which are all eco, health, and vegetarian-related books, and they sell them at discounted prices. You can buy brand-new copies of Diet for a New America there for $5. And they actually had one of their authors, Miyoko Shinner, was there, who's the author of the Artisan Vegan Cheese book that just came out last year. I've been really enjoying that book since you gave it to me, Alyssa. I'm going like one by one through the cheeses, and my friend and I are both into making cheese, and I'm like, there's Miyoko Shinner. Let's go talk to her, because I have questions about Rejuvelac and sprouting that I need to ask her. And so we went over and spoke to her and had a really nice talk with her. And that was so awesome. And then she gave a talk both days in the weekend about artisan vegan cheese. She's so animated and really interesting to listen to. If our listeners remember, just last week, actually, I did a review of the Vegan Mashup cooking series, which she is one of the main hosts of. So it was just really fun to meet her and to see her talk. There's also other talks there, too. There's cooking demos and health-related talks. And and at Miyoko's talk, too, I just wanted to mention, like, as good as it was, she also handed out to every single person in the room a small plate of about 5 different really fancy cheeses that she had made, which were so delicious. And I just, like, left there going, yeah, I'm going to make those for sure. But like I said, I'm going through them, like, one by one. So, so good. So, yeah, definitely, if this has piqued your interest and you live in the Pacific Northwest area of North America like we do, I suggest that you mark VegFest in your calendar for next year. It's always in March, and you can go to the Vegetarians of Washington website at www.vegofwashington.org. So vegofwa.org, and I'm going to be checking that out soon to see when next year's is.
Awesome. Yeah. It's great to volunteer at, too. If you don't have the cash or whatever, they always need tons of volunteers to give out samples and everything.
Exactly.
And that reminds me of our upcoming Veg Fest, I think this summer. I think it's probably going to be in August again.
No, it's at the end of July. I actually got the scoop on that because my friend Melissa is going to be actually selling, liaising with the vendors there. So I think she said it's going to be a two-day event, and it's actually going to be a lot more than it was last year.
Oh, wow, it seems to grow every year, so that's really impressive.
Yeah, I think he said something, it's going to be two full blocks or four full blocks or something like that. Like last I think it was just one block.
Yeah.
Exciting. So stay tuned for that. And you are, of course, listening to CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. And I wanted to mention just some things about Vancouver food news. Tim mentioned there's going to be a new vegetarian vegan restaurant in the city called Gray's opening up in May at Fraser and 24th. The Loving Hut food cart is back on the streets after a few months break. So if you are craving a crispy chicken burger or a barbecue onion ring cheeseburger or a sunshine teriyaki burger or one of their delicious, the healthy grill sandwiches.
All and vegan, we should mention,
of
too.
Of course. And then check them out. That's at the Roundhouse. So right by Yale Town Roundhouse Station, just right out there.
Pacific and Davie.
Yeah, Pacific and Davie. Thanks, Allison. And I wanted to mention another something new in food news in Vancouver. Exciting. So I have a coworker at my other job who has just opened up a new business. It's a milkshake shop. And when she first told me that, I thought, oh, yay, good for you. Like, I'm proud of people for opening businesses and stuff.
Yay, but exploiting cows. Yay.
I think milk is like one of the most exploitative industries of all of them. And so, I was a little bit sad. And I said, well, I hope you'll have some vegan options. And she said, remember when I asked you about what your favorite ice cream was, and I said Coconut Bliss. They're based in Oregon, and they're organic, gluten-free, soy-free, and they have a whole bunch of flavors. She said, well, I got them. And at first, she showed me a menu, and it only had a couple options with the Coconut Bliss in it. They were like tropical kind of flavored shakes, and I was like, well, that's not really quite good enough. Like, good for you, but... And then she was like, okay, yeah, I was meaning to rework the menu, so here it is. And yesterday I got an email, and I was just so excited that all of their gourmet bliss shakes are Coconut Bliss based.
I counted 24 because I had to count how many times I need to go there before I can have each one. They all look so good.
Yeah. So they have shakes with really creative flavors like papaya lemongrass with vanilla Coconut Bliss and almond milk, and mango lassi with mangoes and cardamom. Get figgy with it with chocolate ice cream, coconut water, and figs. And they have some veggie shakes, too, which is neat. They have Coconut Bliss ice cream with pear, cucumber, and lemon. Or how about a chard shake with the Coconut Bliss ice cream, almond milk, chard leaves, and dates. And they said their most popular on their first day of opening was the one with coconut water, pineapple, and kale, and Coconut Bliss. So, yeah, that's Davie and Seymour right downtown. Tons of options, and you can make your own, and they do have dairy as well, but that's kind of like, it's like you have to ask for that option.
That's so great that the non-dairy is the default.
Like, I love
this. This is bizarro world, but I don't mind it.
I really appreciate it.
So I wanted to talk about a little bit about some of the local, or I guess national news this week. We had Finn Donnelly. He's a member of parliament in the New Westminster riding. And we had him on the show about a month or so ago, if you want to look up that interview. Of course, he had introduced the legislation into Parliament to ban the import of shark fin into Canada so that, we can fight the shark fin trade and all the exploitation that it stands for. So this went through the second reading at Parliament this Wednesday, where they voted on it. And guess what happened? Any guesses? Yeah, it was defeated. Can you believe that?
But only by 5 votes.
Yeah, that's the sad thing. So there was 143 nays to 138 yays.
Oh, so close.
Can we get rid of this government already, please?
Are you even Canadian, mister?
No.
I don't know.
know if you can do that. Yeah, so we are not banning shark fin. Finn Donnelly sent out an email to his supporters the other day saying, you know, he's going to continue to push the government to take immediate action to restrict shark fin imports to our country.
Also, another news article that I saw this week was a U.S. congressman shot a lion while on safari in Zimbabwe and ate it for dinner. And it's quite a big discussion topic because he actually told a magazine about his experience. And the direct quote from him, his name is Republican Paul Braun. He said, "If I kill it, I'm going to eat it." And then he added that the lion wasn't particularly tasty. It was kind of chewy, but I ate it. So he really loves hunting and taxidermy. And there was a news show that reported on the incident and was really disgusted with the behavior. So I think it's good that the public image of eating lions is that it is not a positive thing.
Yeah, I saw that video that you shared there about that, and it seemed like his point of pride was that he's like eaten every animal on the safari, and like the people who were taking
him to brag about
the people who took him out to hunt. I think the which country was it? I'm not even sure.
But Zimbabwe.
The guides were kind of laughing at him for eating the lion because I don't think they eat lions there. But speaking of eating lions, though, I was curious about how popular that is. I've never really heard so much about people eating lions, but I learned a couple things, actually. One is that the Maasai community of Tanzania, one of Africa's oldest semi-nomadic herder tribes of 68,000 people approximately, is totally under threat right now, currently just about to be evicted by the Tanzanian government, who wants the land in order to set up basically like hunting grounds for lions and leopards, for people to come and do like tourists to come and shoot lions, because that's a cool thing to do.
It's a big industry.
So yeah, there's a big petition on avaz.org if you want to help them stand up to the Tanzanian government. And the other thing I learned was that lion meat is being sold in some places in the U.S.
What?
And it is. And I didn't really know much about it, but there's actually currently now a bill up in the state of Illinois where most of the lion meat is traced back to, and the bill is to ban the sale of lion meat and the slaughter of animals in
Good.
Illinois.
There's probably no ban already, because who would have thought we would have needed a ban? Who would have thought people would want to eat lions?
I know, and there's no regulation right now because, you know, it's just like, why would that even need to be a rule? But Born Free USA is working on that really hard, and they're based in the U.S., and they say the lion population of Africa has been reduced in half by 1980, and they're concerned if the demand keeps rising, that'll be just decimated in the next, you know, few years.
Just like the sharks, just like the polar bears, other animals that we've talked about on the show. Terrible.
Yeah. And I guess Tim, you were going to share your review of Vegan Secret Supper, the new book by my former roommate Merida Anderson.
Exactly. Merida Anderson is a self-taught chef from Vancouver who now lives in Montreal. She is probably the one who brought vegan underground restaurants to Vancouver. She started Vegan Secret Supper almost 5 years ago in a small attic apartment with a tiny kitchen, coincidentally, as you said, the same apartment where Alyssa and I now live. And she has grown her Secret Supper ever since. What's an underground restaurant, you might ask? Well, Merida started cooking fancy three-course vegan meals for friends every Sunday evening. And those friends brought friends and so on. And word spread, and before you knew, there were 5 tables in the living room and the place was buzzing every weekend. Vegan Secret Supper, or just so short, VSS, was born. VSS inspired many people in Vancouver. I heard that there are currently at least 3 active vegan underground dinners in the city, and there were even more in the past, like the Vegan Brunch, who are currently on a hiatus. Lo and behold, Merida finally published her favorite recipes in a book titled Vegan Secret Supper, Bold and Elegant Menus from a Rogue Kitchen. It's published by Arsenal Pulp Press, who are also based in Vancouver, and is due to hit the shelves beginning of April. I start right away by saying I absolutely love this book. It's one of the most inspiring cooking books I've read in a while. Maybe that's partly because Merida and I have a very similar approach to food. She started meatless cooking at a young age simply out of necessity, because she decided to become vegan and her mother didn't know what to cook for her. I had actually the same experience. Merida taught herself, always aiming to improve her cooking, and remained very playful doing so. Since she started at a young age, she developed her own vegan cuisine and was not faced with the problem of having to relearn cooking after becoming vegan. Consequently, you won't find any veganized classics in this book. If you're looking for vegan mac and cheese, vegan burgers, or tofu scrambled, this is not the book for you. No, the only vegan rendition of classical dishes I found in this book is a vegan crème brûlée, and that one is based on sweet potatoes. How awesome is that? I would say the recipes are not so complicated that a beginner wouldn't be able to make them, but this is definitely a book for somebody looking to broaden their horizons. The recipes are all very creative, very artistic, and very fancy. It's definitely not for your everyday cooking, but for special occasions, and it showcases what vegan food is really capable of. Everything is made from scratch, and Merida really focuses on veggies and wholesome ingredients. You don't find any meat substitutes, and the few tofu recipes are so inspiring that I want to try them right away. One is apple smoked tofu and caramelized onion spring rolls with carrot tamarind chutney and avocado aioli. The other one is pepper crusted cashew cheese with juniper tofu and olive tapenade. I don't think I can remember I ever used juniper berries outside of gin before. Another thing I love about the book is that she uses many infused oils, syrups, reductions, and spice mixes and explains how to make them all yourself. However, that also means that the menus take some time to prepare. Merida notes that she often takes 3 days in advance to prepare the dinners. That's truly slow cooking at its best. We have something like hazelnut-crusted portobello with caramelized fennel parsnip mash, radicchio marmalade, and balsamic pot reduction. Wow, radicchio marmalade, I've never heard of that before. Not only are the recipes really inspiring, I also love the look of the book and especially the plating pictures. In many cookbooks, food pictures are often artificially propped up, which is why your results never look as nice as in the books. But I can tell that her pictures are real, yet stunningly beautiful. Merida really is an artist, and her plating is creative, inspiring, and simply beautiful. Since I got the book, it's been lying next to our sofa, and I love to pick it up and just look at the pictures and start dreaming and drooling. The only thing I find wanting in the book is a bit more background information and stories. I had really hoped that Merida would write more about her experiences running an underground restaurant or have some tales to tell how certain recipes came about. There are a few pages of background information at the beginning of the book, and after that it's just recipes. Awesome recipes, that is, but just recipes. The head notes for the recipes are very, very short, and it's not rare that the title of the recipe is longer than the head note, which I find a bit of a pity. I always want to know more than just the recipe. However, I've noticed that with other books published by Arsenal as well, so I'm not sure whether it's the author or the publisher to blame. But regardless of that, it's a really awesome book, and I wholeheartedly recommend it to everyone who wants to broaden their horizon and let their creativity flow. What do you guys think?
Well, I was so intrigued that I've actually bought it already, and it is for sale in Vancouver already. I think it's only $15 at Costco.
Oh, wow.
Probably just a local thing, because Arsenal Pulp Press is local, and I think the retail price is $26.
Nice shoes have it as well, but I think for the full price.
Right. So if you're a Costco member, head down right away, because I got it a couple weeks ago, because they don't have their books for that often, and it's probably a promotional thing, and you know, Costco's cheap. And I also wanted to mention that we actually had Merida on the show a few years ago. Was it you, Alyssa, who interviewed her? I can't remember.
It wasn't. No.
It must have been, I don't remember. So it might be on her website. Hopefully it is. Just do a little search.
I've talked to her, and she would be very interested in coming again on the show. So I was thinking I could do a short interview in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and then we can hear more about the behind the scenes, and you can get all the stories you want.
Exactly, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the book. I'm so excited. And I'm really thankful that she mentioned me in my tiny, humble attic apartment.
Name is in the
Thanks,
book.
Thanks, Merida. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, it's like you're famous.
Yeah, that was really nice of her to mention.
Drishti Point is a radio program featuring interviews about yoga, spirituality, and wellness. Our guests include yogis, authors, musicians, healers, and renowned spiritual teachers. Tune in Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. for your weekly dose of yoga wisdom and inspiration.
And now we wanted to talk a bit about Easter. Today is Good Friday. It's March 29th, 2013, as we said. And it has a little bit of religious overtones. And it's also just a fun time for kiddies to get out and collect Easter eggs. And the Easter Bunny comes, I think, over the weekend. Not sure what day. That's exciting. And yeah, there's just kind of a lot surrounding this and kind of the shadows and the exploitation behind it around non-human animals. There's chicks and chickens and bunnies and even
animal symbolism.
Yeah, and even where the chocolate comes from. So even the cows are involved there with their milk. So yeah, we wanted to just kind of unpack some of this and talk about Easter. Let's talk about the meaning of it first.
Well, to put it simply, Easter, it's a Christian festival and holiday celebrating the resurrection of Jesus Christ on the third day after his crucifixion. And people are probably fairly familiar with that, I would think. And then, you know, there's all these Easter customs that have come out of that. And in doing my research on this, I found that, you know, they date back from way back to 2,000 years ago, right? Like before this all happened. So Easter customs vary across the Christian world, but you'll see customs such as attending sunrise services and something that is called exclaiming the Paschal greeting, which is greeting people with the phrase, Christ has risen. And then, of course, there's decorating Easter eggs, which is, did you know what it's a symbol of? Any guesses? Christianity just, related?
No, I think it goes back further than that.
Well,
I think it's...
Well, there was an Easter before Easter.
No, there was. So, there was. I have...
Oh, okay. So I'm talking about the Christian roots. But Okay. Actually, okay, so interesting. I'm interested to hear what you have because I did a lot of reading about it. And it's apparently a symbol of the empty tomb of Jesus, which it's a common motif that's been carried back since then. So if you can think about that... eggs. A bird hatches from an egg and from it with life, right? So similarly, the Easter egg for Christians, it's a reminder that Jesus rose from the grave and that those who believe that will also experience eternal life. So I just find that it's interesting how the symbology that it just seems so benign and beautifully historic, you know, in our culture, beautiful Easter eggs. It's morphed over the past few thousand years to really represent a great exploitation to our fellow animals who are the ones that suffer so that this holiday can be celebrated, such as using their eggs to decorate and breeding and selling bunnies and baby chicks to people who just buy them on a whim and then easily discard them as if they were garbage. I want to hear more about what you were talking
sure,
about.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I learned that the exchange of eggs goes way back pre-Christian times. It's an ancient custom celebrated by lots of cultures around the world. I think because it just symbolizes spring. It's new life. The sun has arisen. So so basically, yeah, it's it's time for the sun. It's a fertile time. And I found, interestingly, where bunnies came into it. They're left over from the pagan festival of Eostre, a great northern goddess of the dawn whose symbol was the rabbit or the hare. She was the great mother goddess of the Saxon people of northern Europe, known as the dawn goddess of fertility, as I said. And her name was derived from the ancient word for spring, which is Easter, with R-E, and similar goddesses were known by other names in ancient cultures similar to Easter, and they were celebrating the springtime. So yeah, that's kind of how bunnies came into it, interestingly.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about just some of the egg-related traditions that are related to Easter, such as in the north of England at Easter time, a traditional game is played where hard-boiled eggs are distributed and each player hits the other player's egg with their own. And this is known as egg tapping, egg dumping, or egg jarping. And the winner is the holder of the last intact egg, and also the losers get to eat their eggs. This is still happening at all different kinds of places and countries in Europe.
I grew up with that.
Well, really, because I wanted to point out a German celebration. People decorate trees and bushes as Easter egg trees. Did you do that?
What, you don't do that here?
No, we do not do that here. We simply hide them around and get people to find the eggs. We do Easter egg hunts.
Oh, no, that's like a typical thing like kids do in kindergarten or at school, like decorate eggs. And it doesn't even have to be real eggs. It could be like paper eggs or something. And then you put them on like, how do you call these branches with the furry cat
ferns?
Paws?
Cat
pussy willow.
Pussy willows. Yeah,
pussy willow branches, and then you have these eggs hanging from them, and you put them in the house.
Yeah, another tradition is cascarones. It's a northeastern Mexican tradition now shared by many in South Texas, and they are an emptied and dried chicken egg stuffed with confetti and sealed with a piece of tissue paper. And the eggs are hidden in a similar tradition to the American Easter egg hunt. And when found, the children and adults break them over each other's heads. So it just makes me really think about, you know, Easter egg hunts and using eggs in these ways. I just really feel it just perpetuates the idea that animals and products of animals are for us to use and exploit. And I don't think people just really think about that at all.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people don't think that there's much cruelty involved in egg production. You know,
it's
the hen doesn't have to die. It's just their bodies produce it naturally. You know, they have, I think, like 99% of the population has a really fuzzy view, like a kind of pink fuzzy view of what goes on. Today, actually, though, in the Vancouver Sun, March 28th, I think it might have been only online. I'm not totally sure. There was an opinion article called Easter is Better When It's Humane. When deciding what kind of eggs to decorate this holiday, consider free range, free run, or organic products. And that was by Leanne McConaughey, director of farm animal programs at the Vancouver Humane Society. And she was urging readers to have an eggless Easter, or at the very least, go for cage free or free run. And she kind of explained what each of those meant. And she said organic is the best because they get the most outside time. So I just kind of wanted to talk about what battery cages are. And I found this really nice piece on United Poultry Concerns website. It's from Karen Davis, PhD, and from a work called Thinking Like a Chicken, Farm Animals and the Feminine Connection. And it's just like from the perspective of a hen in the battery cage system. So I am a battery hen. I live in a cage so small I can't stretch my wings. I'm forced to stand night and day on a sloping wire mesh floor that painfully cuts into my feet. The cage walls tear my feathers, forming blood blisters that never heal. The air is so full of ammonia that my lungs hurt and my eyes burn, and I think I'm going to blind. As soon as I was born, a man grabbed me and sheared off part of my beak with a hot iron, and my little brothers were thrown into trash bags as useless alive. My mind is alert, my body is sensitive, and I should have been richly feathered. In nature or even a farmyard, I would have had sociable cleansing dust baths with my flockmates, a need so strong that I perform vacuum dust bathing on the wire floor of my cage. Free, I would have ranged my ancestral jungles and fields with my mates, devouring plants, earthworms, and insects from sunrise to dusk. I would have exercised my body and expressed my nature. I would have given and received pleasure as a whole being. I am only a year old, but I'm already a spent hen. Humans, I wish I were dead, and soon I will be dead. Look for pieces of my wounded flesh wherever chicken pies and soups are sold. And that's, again, by Karen Davis of United Poultry Concerns, which is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization that since 1990 has been addressing the treatment of domestic fowl in food production, science, education, entertainment, and human companionship situations.
Wow, I know that even, with Easter, there's a lot of concerns around the bunnies, too, is a big issue. It's really, there's a lot of animal exploitation associated with this holiday.
And chicks, baby chicks.
Yeah, and chicks, too, that's right. I didn't even know about a lot of these things until more recently, and I met with some people. I went to a potluck in Langley, and a woman there was involved with the Rabbitat Rescue Society, and they help rabbits, because I guess it's a big problem. A lot of people purchase rabbits as pets at Easter or as a gift for someone and they don't realize that it's a commitment to take care of an animal, much like in inviting a child or family member or other pet into your life, animal companion.
Yeah, and don't they live something like 8 to 10 years? Like
yeah, lifespans yeah. vary.
They can live up to 10 years.
Yeah. Wow. But it's definitely something that needs to be cared for and not to be forgotten about after the holiday ends. So the Rabbitat Rescue Society helps rabbits that need care and housing and etc. So actually, in honor of all of these Easter traditions, my club at SFU, the Love Club, we're having a bake sale on Wednesday. So if anyone's in the SFU area, we'll be in the AQ, the Academic Quadrangle, from 10 to 2, selling vegan baked goods. In efforts to raise funds for the Rabbitat Rescue Society. So that should be a lot of fun.
Can I tell a story? Easter related?
Or yeah, for a couple minutes. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, so I was just chatting with my sister last night. She works in a big-ish, large-ish government office, and they had a meeting the other day where everyone just goes around and says what they've been up to or what they're doing. And her coworker, everyone knows my sister's a vegan, right? Her coworker announces quite proudly, it seems like, that her family has decided to eat a lamb for Easter instead of a pig, aka ham, because it's healthier. And my sister was just totally grossed out. And she's like, oh my goodness, I'm sitting right there. How could she say such a thing? And just again, it just goes to show that people just really don't realize and they just don't think. And I don't know how we can communicate with people. I think we just really need to personalize those animals and show people that these are living creatures. They're no different than your pet dog or companion animal, cat or anything, you know, and there's other options out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to celebrate, the meaning of this holiday, whether it's on the religious side or on the sort of pagan spring celebration side, to use eggs, obviously, of different kinds of materials. And there's a new product called Egg Knots I saw, and lots of which are ceramic eggs, which you can buy in a pack of 6 and then paint them and decorate them.
Okay.
And they're pretty affordable. Or you could make them at home with paper mache or glass or anything. And of course, for like recipes and things like that, there's a jillion alternatives. So yeah, it's just like pushing it a little, maybe each year having it a little bit more compassionate and making those decisions wisely.
I think, too, that crafting is a really great way to bring in different ways to celebrate Easter if you have kids. I know I've been working at a summer camp all week this past week, so it would be certainly easy to make an egg out of styrofoam or just on paper and decorate a similar shape using felts or paints that are animal-free.
Yeah, Liberation BC had a great blog about that, making Easter fun for vegan kids, and Liberation BC is the local Vancouver animal rights group.
I also think, too, that a lot of people in our country, North America, aren't Christians, so the symbology there is lost, and they're just really exploiting animals for the sake of it because it's tradition and that's what people do. So, you know, traditions can be changed, for sure.
Oh, but we just said we are celebrating spring and rabbits, right?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think in general people have like a need and a desire to want to celebrate.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that's a great segue into an event that's coming up. I think it's really important to celebrate. And one way that you can celebrate is Nice Shoes is having their 2-year anniversary party. And that's coming up on April 5th. And it's not just a celebration of their anniversary. It's also a fundraiser for the Fur Bearer Defenders. That's the association for the protection of fur-bearing animals. So it's going to be at 6 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. on Friday, April 5th. There's going to be food provided by the Loving Hut Express and raffle prizes and campaign updates from Executive Director of the Fur Bearer Defenders, Leslie Fox. So all the proceeds from ticket sales, including the cost of food, will go towards the organization. And Nice Shoes is also donating 10% of their sales from that day to the organization. And the menu is 100% vegan. There's going to be lots of different options. So tickets are $35 and are currently on sale in person at Nice Shoes or at the Fur Bearers Defenders office. So to purchase your tickets, you can call their office at 604 604- 435-1850 or drop by in person at 179 West Broadway to visit the Fur Bearer Defenders.
And they're a great local organization to support. You know, I know Leslie and saw her at VegFest. They had a presence there and a table there, and she does a lot of great work for the animals.
And I know Joanne from Nice Shoes is collecting some amazing raffle prizes.
Ooh la la.
But you have to buy a ticket before April 1st if you want to have food, because I need to plan ahead. So
do it right away.
Yeah.
Call but right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Actually, and speaking of things that I've been up to lately, as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, I was working at a spring break camp this past week. So Easter isn't the only celebration. There's also spring break going on, lots of fun stuff for kids. And it was really interesting for me working there because I've worked at summer camps for quite some time now. And it's always interesting being in a teacher type role because I never want to be too forward with my views, imparting them on other people's children, etc. And also the purpose of the camp isn't for children to learn about animal rights. It's just a fun camp. This week it was a drama camp, so that's not really the focus. But I actually became really disturbed quite a few times during the camp because we were working with pretty traditional classic fairy tales that I grew up with and had never really questioned or thought about too deeply before. And I remember I was sitting there with the kids and I was reading them the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. And then I really started to put things in perspective, because if you're not familiar with the story, Jack has a cow with his mother, and he seems to love the cow and have a relationship with it, and they need money, so the mother tells him to go and sell the cow. So, of course, as sad as he might be, Jack does, in fact, go and he sells the cow, and a strange man gives him a handful of magic beans, and then he takes the beans home, and he plants them, and a large beanstalk grows, which he climbs up, and he finds himself in a land of giants where they want to eat him.
And is this a capitalist story? Anyway, go on.
We could have a few different variations of this one. But so he winds up in this land of giants who want to eat him. And then while he's in this land of giants, he finds a hen that lays golden eggs. So he takes the hen and escapes down the beanstalk and then chops it down, killing the giant and living happily ever after with his golden egg-producing hen that can then support him and his mother. So I'd never really thought about this fairy tale or any others too deeply in terms of animals until more recently working with them from the perspective of an animal rights advocate. But I was realizing that if we were to take that story and put it in the context of of humans, then it would be that that Jack takes his slave, who he loves very much, and his mother tells him they need to sell his slave friend to make money. So he would then go and sell his slave friend to a strange man who would give him magic beans, and he would plant the beans and climb up the beanstalk, where he would be in a land of other people who may want to hurt him. And instead of using nonviolent means to react to the situation, he would then steal a slave from them who would produce products that would support his livelihood, and he would take his new slave back down to his mother and then kill the people that were trying to hurt him. So I was pretty disturbed when I was thinking about this, and I felt really bad because I'm here reading the story to the kids and I'm telling them, oh, well, you have to be the cow now, and okay, go and sell the cow, because we were acting out the story and that was what needed to happen in the camp. But at the same time, I'm like, this feels so wrong to me. So I was just wondering from you guys if you'd ever thought about any fairy tales in terms of the role of animals that they play in them or anything like that, if you have any thoughts.
Just in terms of violence, aren't a lot of them violent? Because they all seem to happen in like the medieval days where violence was just a normal way of life. And I'm trying to think some examples here. And
actually, yeah, I've got some good background on that because I spent a lot of time
in Red Riding Hood.
Yes. Well, many of these fairy tales, if you actually look at the original Grimm's fairy tales, and one of the universities has put them online, so if you Google Grimm's fairy tales, you can find all the original versions for free, but many of them have kind of been, quote-unquote, Disneyfied and put, a shiny stamp on them in the past few years and with modern times. But, if you look at the original Hansel and Gretel, for instance, Hansel and Gretel, I believe they die in the forest, and it's very very dark. Or Cinderella, her sisters are, her stepsisters are put on fence posts where they bleed out and their eyes are pecked out by birds and they die there. And so many of them are very dark if you look at the original versions.
Even the little mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen, the mermaid dies. So
what? Not in the Disney version.
Not in the Disney version.
Mermaid.
There's a really nice YouTube channel. I forgot its name, but it's a woman who takes all these Disney fairy tales apart and compares them to the original version. Yeah, it's worth to look it up.
What about Three Little Pigs? Is that exploitative to... Yes, because don't they kill the wolf or do something bad to the wolf?
I think the... Well, it depends on the version you look at, obviously.
I guess the version that everyone kind of knows, the Disney-fied version, is because I'm thinking, oh, everyone's rooting for the Three Little Pigs, but then the wolf has to suffer.
I wondered about that one also, though, because the pigs are the protagonist in that story. So that one's a little bit different.
And also, like, wolves are natural predators. It's not like, you know, they should go vegan or, like, you know.
But it's really shining a bad light on the wolves, like, that perpetuates that notion.
The monster wolf thing.
That wolves are a bad thing. And that can be transferred to our current issues in our society where they're trying to cull wolves, right? And and for reasons that are not needed. We've discussed that. I did an interview about that on the show a couple years ago. And, you know, it's just... I think that comes from the Three Little Pigs and Little Red Riding Hood.
I really like, though, I think in modern times there's a lot of new books being written that place different spins on these more traditional tales that we're used to hearing. And there was one, it was even available when I was growing up, so it's still available, and it's, I believe it's called The True Story of the Three Little Pigs, and it's from the wolf's perspective. So it's written about how the wolf is going to borrow some sugar from his neighbors, and he shows up, and then they start freaking out, and they run away from him, and poor wolf, and he ends up in jail at the end, I believe, and it's quite sad. He's trying to tell his story, but I think it's good to share things from different perspectives. So I was really inspired, and in my free time I plan to start writing some vegan versions of classic fairy tales that place animals in a non-subservient role, and share, because I think it's really great, this notion of wanting to celebrate animals and have them be part of our culture. Because I also noticed at my summer camp, when we'd go around and talk about things, the kids would all be like, oh, I love animals. And when we'd make our paper bag puppets and do our face painting and stuff, they would all want to be cats and
children love
tigers
animals.
And so many different animals, bunnies, we had everything.
Haven't been desensitized yet. Mm-hmm. But speaking of just vegan fairy tales for kids, you know, it seems that there's a lot of vegan-based focused children's storybooks that are coming out. So maybe that's something that you could check out just to...
Really? Because in the research I've done, there's a few vegan books that are more about, like, being vegan, or, like, there's one that just came out not too long ago called Steven the Vegan, and it's about how he takes his class to visit a animal sanctuary, and that explains, this is why I'm
sure
a vegan.
There's ones about animals too. I'm going to look that up and see what I can find for you, because I don't really I don't really notice them because it's not really my interest, but now it is, because
this is an ongoing
follow-up
quest
to do.
I've definitely come across maybe just one blog. I think I was looking for vegan kids songs, and I found there is vegan parents out there who know that, you know, these songs that we sing and the stories that we tell are very often not vegan, so they're all talking about just kind of veganizing them and making them more compassionate. And yeah,
I think it's a fine line, because I really like, too, I have a friend who's an illustrator. Her name's also Allison, and she's a vegan. And I asked her, like, what do you think about, like, drawing animals and using them in art? Because so often they're used in a subservient role, or what's your opinion on that? And she had a really great answer, because she told me that she thinks it's a celebration of something beautiful. And she thinks that one of the purposes of art is to celebrate the world. And so she really likes, she draws the most amazing, like, cute, adorable animals. If you creep me on Facebook, Jenny Rempel, you can see my like background picture on Facebook.
Jenny
is this drawing.
Rempel.
Very good, yes. You can find it either way. But so she's drawn all these adorable animals that are singing with me in the forest. And so I really like that she wants to use it as a celebration of animals. And I think that that art can do a lot to celebrate that, which really promotes veganism, I think, and respect for all creatures and animals.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. Did you have any final thoughts about fairy tales, Jenny?
I just wanted to conclude by saying that I think, with myself, it was really interesting this week learning that and reflecting on these things, and especially because I just wanted to announce that this is my last show for a while. I'm hoping to contribute a little bit, but I'm leaving very soon to go to New York City for 3 months, where I'm going to be interning with Mercy for Animals, which is an animal rights organization in the States dedicated to promoting compassion for all animals and ending factory farming. So I'm really excited to be able to dedicate my, like, quote-unquote work time to be helping animals.
You're
and
really lucky to be able to do that. It's something that I wish I should have done when I was a student, was to travel to the States and volunteer for some wonderful AR organizations.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah.
But hopefully I'll be able to do some interviews while I'm down there and send some contributions to the show. But I'm really excited to see how that is for me, because I know some people like to do animal rights or help animals more in their spare time, and other people choose it as a career. And so it's a really interesting world of how what is the best way for us to use our resources to make these changes in the world.
Yeah, because you don't want your passion to be drained. If it becomes just your regular job, are you the most effective? It's an interesting question, and I hope you find good answers and come back and share some wisdom with us. I know it is like an individual choice, but yeah, we can't wait to hear your stories and for you to come back and share.
I'm going to live vicariously through your experiences.
Okay, so we're just about to wrap up the show. I wanted to share some events coming up. We mentioned a couple already, and I have a couple more. One is that EarthSave is presenting a free lecture by Dr. Neil Barnard. He's the president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, or PCRM, and they're all about vegan outreach in the medical field and talking about the power of plant-based diets for ultimate health and wellness. And Dr. Barnard is going to be speaking about his new book, Power Foods for the Brain, and sharing how foods and lifestyle choices can strengthen the brain and protect against everyday memory lapses, senior moments, and reduce your risk of Alzheimer's disease. That'll be Friday, April 12th at 8 p.m. at UBC Robson Square in one of the theaters there.
C300.
Robson and Howe in Vancouver. So that's exciting and free.
And that's right near the ice rink, right?
I think you need to RSVP. So you can get in touch with EarthSave to RSVP.
Only you don't have to RSVP, but if you want to guarantee a spot there and you're an EarthSave member, then you need to RSVP, but it is open to the public, so if you show up at 7:30, that's when the doors open, you should get in. I think this is going to be a really popular talk because Dr. Barnard's popularity has really risen in the last few years. He's showing up in all these
He
was on Dr. Oz a few weeks ago. Yeah. He's been on the Doctor's Show, and he's popping up on all these different TV shows, and I think people are getting to really know him and respect him in general, just like the general public. So.
Yeah. And one more event is an event that I'm organizing, co-organizing, with my friend Cynthia Gantara. She's a yoga teacher who studied under a traditional lineage of Raja Yoga from India. And I'm going to be combining my sort of animal rights background with her yoga background. She's also a vegan animal rights activist. And we're going to be talking about the connections between yoga and the vegan lifestyle. And that'll be Thursday, April 11th from 6 until 9 at the Toast Collective space in Vancouver at 648 Kingsway. And we're going to be discussing the philosophies and roots of yoga, not just the asana practice, the physical practice on the mat that most people are familiar here with on the West. It is a full, broad lifestyle based in Hindu roots and a whole lot about morality there that relates very well to the practice of veganism. So we're just going to have a discussion there. And there'll be a guided meditation and snacks and tea. And it's a sliding scale of $1 to $30 or whatever you can is much appreciated. All goes towards community yoga. And more info at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And that's about it for today. Please keep in touch with us. Our website is animalvoices.org. And there you'll find links to our social networking sites. You can get in touch with us again at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions. Mm-hmm. Next week on the show, Allison?
So I'll be doing, we'll be doing two interviews next week. The feature interview will be with Dr. Clifton Flynn, who has written a book called Understanding Animal Abuse. And we'll be speaking on that topic with him, which I think will be really interesting. Also, we'll have an interview with Sarah Dubois, who is, I believe she's a wildlife manager of the BCSPCA. With, wildlife is out and about now, or springtime. And I personally had an experience a week or so ago where I found a dead raccoon on the ground. And I wasn't really quite sure what to do. You know, it's a delicate situation with raccoons. They can be dangerous. Wasn't sure actually if he was really dead or not. And it sort of prompted me to think about, you know, it's that time of the year where I want some information on how to deal with injured wildlife. So partially for my benefit, but for everyone's benefit, because it's that time of the year and I'm sure others have had similar experiences as well. So she's going to empower us with some knowledge on that next week.
Animal Voice is going to leave you with a song called Aminals by Baths. It's a great tune in honor of the upbeat, beautiful weather and the children playing in yards and fairy tales and Easter and everything. So yeah, enjoy and remember to be kind to animals.
I just wanted to add one last thing. I forgot to remember book review. You can also find Merida on her website, vegansecretsupper.com. So make sure to check that out.
Sort of animal language, really.